Hi, David.
Yes, caller number two, yes. What's on your agenda today? Because I have another caller here. Perhaps you can join him if your subject is relevant. Let me hear what you have.
My subject is not part of his time.
What's your issue?
My issue today is that I am happy that members of the former of the Democratic Labor Party are now speaking to the public. But my hope is that they do not think that they should always go before partisan crowds and speak to them.
Isn't that safer?
Isn't that what?
Safer.
I guess it's much safer, but I hope that they do come before crowds who are willing to ask them questions, and I hope that they're willing to answer. Right? So
I want to give you an observation on that, huh? I think that one of the biggest errors of the former administration was a notion that they needed to speak in two places largely and a third, occasionally. The first place that they saw that they had to report to the people was Parliament. In principle, yes, but it is not the only place to get your message across. You had to mix that with other fora. They were too limited, and the former Prime Minister who spoke last night, he captured it time and time again in that particular way. So what happened was that it was either the branch meeting, similar to what happened last night, all right, Parliament, or speaking when somebody, you're opening a function, all right? All the other avenues available were considered to be tainted. These people basically were spin doctors and that sort of language that we heard yet again last night. And I thought that was the error that was committed then. And it is not surprising to see that the same forum is being used again to try.
I listened to the speech by the former Minister of Education, Ronald Jones, too, and I found it so laughable that you could tell the Barbadian public that one of the reasons why you all lost the election because
of a fickle middle class.
The interests of the poor and downtrodden and the middle class are one paycheck away from being back to where they were.
A fickle middle class. That's basically what I read.
Let me give you some figures, right? That from the World Bank, and anybody can, the basic figures that you can go and look at yourself. In between 2008, Barbados, by 2008-2009, Barbados was a $7 billion economy, right? $7 billion U.S. economy. Barbados economy contracted after the Democratic Labor Party came to office. The per capita income per Barbadian was only surpassed by two countries in the Caribbean, Trinidad and the Bahamas. The Bahamas was number one at $31,000 per person. Trinidad was around the $27,000 per person. Barbados was hovering around the $25,000 per person per capita. Today, Barbados economy has contracted down to about $5.4 billion economy, with our per capita earnings are around $18,000. So when he talks about looking after poor, they have made Barbados poorer than what they were before. So I mean, when you go, what they need to do is address people who are going to ask them questions about alleged corruption. That's what they need to answer, as far as I'm concerned. Thank you, David.
Well, I think that the issues are much broader than that. I think that the concerns which have been raised here in the speech by the former Prime Minister, for those of us who have been following the elections and the speeches that were made before the elections, I've heard all of this before. There's only one component of the speech last night that I would say I didn't know prior to last night, and it is when he said that he went to Canada and spoke to the commercial banks and to a major entity there about the need to cut, that he was going to cut the corporation taxes as a means of trying to keep Canadian companies here in Barbados. And I was hearing that for the first time. It might have been said elsewhere, but I never heard it before. So it is up to you now, because many of you might have been able to see it on Facebook. And I had asked the question on Friday whether that speech, where that was that speech going to leave him and the Democratic Labour Party? How relevant do you think it would have been? And now is the time, having heard it, you can give your various answers to those questions. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good morning.
The other caller there with you in relation to
agriculture?
Agriculture?
Yes, he's still here, I believe. Hello?
He's still here.
He's still here.
I've been listening. And one of the things you said, you are qualified in marketing. You also went on to say that because of family tradition, academic family, and here, well, let me go into this. The reason why the person, I qualify myself, have not had any university training, but from the area of knowledge and experience and reading, the reason why the person walked past the person in the car park and went inside the supermarket and bought from the supermarket, one is packaging. Number two is presentation. And any good salesperson, any good marketing person would know that the two elements that go together is something called presentation. That is why one of the first things you learn if you're involved in sales is telephone approach, how to use a telephone to sell the product and how to identify. There are many people who sold mansions over the telephone but never was seen by the buyer. So my advice to you is that if you're involved in sales, product knowledge is extremely important. Whether you're selling carrots or whether you're selling a BMW, product knowledge is extremely important. And product knowledge comes...
Well, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
The caller, and I'm sure you've seen it yourself, Mark. You go into a place like New York, go in Times Square, and look and see how the people who are selling food from the vans... how attractive the vans are.
Presentation.
Look at the presentation that comes from these people and ask the question whether if you want to compete with supermarkets and stores, what is it that you have to do with your own presentation to make the difference? Marketer, what do you think?
Well, the presentation is very important. Right, it is. As I said, the guy, I don't know if he had heard when I said the guy have his stuff well displayed. Well displayed.
I don't want to interrupt you. Displayed does not mean that the presentation is adequate for the buyer. So go ahead, I'll give you the answer to that. Well displayed, you know, is just a part of what the person should be doing.
Well displayed. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
What's the next one?
All right, let me use that example, right? I used to work for a big company. And when I go to sell stuff at a big company on the streets, it will sell like a snap of a finger, right?
Yeah.
When you go to sell something that you do, it's a problem.
Well, what's the difference?
The difference to me is I can use my business as an example. My business is not agriculture, right? This is if you're the guy that owned the fish gear booth on Columbia Rock.
Mm-hmm.
No, if you look, pardon?
That's in there?
No, not legendary. It'll be far better than legendary. Legendary can't walk in my shoes.
Go ahead. I got your head. Go ahead.
Cannot.
Go ahead, product knowledge.
And as you had said, right, product knowledge is very important. I have a very close relationship with my suppliers. My supplier informed me about the oil, right? He informed me where the fish come from, what kind of fish it is, all these kind of things, right? I get my potatoes from my supplier. I get everything from my supplier. My supplier show me and tell me exactly. So when people question me, I can answer them.
And that product knowledge, people are actually asking for that kind of information?
There are people that come and ask you what kind of oil I use.
Yes.
What kind of fish I use.
That's not the product knowledge, Mr. Ellis.
Right? No. Just hold on, Mark. Let a man talk.
Right.
Yes.
People ask me all these questions. No.
So, let me ask you one more question on that.
Yeah.
What is driving these questions?
Well, a lot of people are looking at what they're eating these days and where it's coming from these days. I find that people are a whole lot more educated about about not educated, and people are more concerned about where our raw materials are coming from.
Such as?
They ask a lot of questions, like the oil and the flour. They ask, you know, as they said before, they ask where the fish come from.
What are they preferring? Where do they prefer their products to come from more than anywhere else?
You know, when they ask that question, they don't answer me. They don't have an answer.
When you give them an answer,
right? They just buckle and shush because I give them exact information.
Okay. So something like right now with the coronavirus and that sort of thing, made in China stuff is a problem?
All of that. All of that. And let me show you about presentation too, right? If you ever see my van on the road, my van is be clean, right? My stuff is well presented, right? And let me give you an example. One day, you know when the electricity went off for a long period of time and we had problems for like days with electricity?
Yes.
The electricity shut down for an entire day. I was at a location. I had everything in the van. I had fish cakes, I had big franks, I had barbecue chicken wings, I had the whole shebang. And when I went, I was at this location when the electricity went off, and I said, hey, you know, people was asking, you know, we can get something to eat from. I said, some of the same people who buy from me, I said, well, you know, I got food outside in the van. I had just stopped here to check something. If you're interested, y'all could buy. You know what they tell me? They're going to wait till Kentucky and Chefette open.
No.
So you tell me.
How did you feel about that?
I just laugh. I just laugh and laugh. I just laugh and laugh, you know?
So what do you think is driving that? Again, there's a top-of-mind awareness. There is a certain expectation that they have in terms of what the food is going to taste like from the people that they know well enough. How does that relate to you? A lot of those people, these are the same people who were buying from you otherwise?
Some of them buy from me.
And some didn't.
Every now and then. Some buy from me every now and then, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what really freaked me out, like the people next door, they had bought. We ain't know what thing the electricity coming back on, so we can buy something here right now. We know this man things. But the other people just stand there and just...
Because they didn't know.
But if you see other people buying something and you know that it is good, you see other people buying it right in front of you, you can still stick to the fact that Kentucky and Chefette, Kentucky and Chefette cannot prepare a better chicken than me.
But you see,
a much healthier chicken than me.
But this isn't, you are a marketer. You know full well that a lot of this has to do with testing the psyche of a people.
That's right.
And their patterns.
That's right.
And the things that influence them.
Correct.
And that raises the question, the little operator out there on the street, people who are less equipped than you are to understand these things, they don't get into that nitty-gritty. They have never had that kind of exposure. They don't know how to up the game to reach the person as a sole operator. And in addition to that, they don't have debit nor credit card facilities.
You know.
I have a system that I use. I have M-Money. Right? I have something called M-Money. And when I tell people about M-Money, I mean, I advertise it. I keep telling them about it. I put it on my Instagram page.
Okay.
On my Facebook
tell
page.
People how that works.
M-Money is the Barbados dollar electronically. What they do is I work with a company called Bitcoin. Right? They have cashiers around the place. I know Calton at A1 have a cashier. You can put, and money is an app that you load on your phone, right? If you don't have to walk with physical cash, once you have your phone, you put the cash on and money, it is in your phone. So when you come to me now and you don't have cash in your hand, I can scan your phone. You know, I bring up my M-Money account, you bring it yours, I scan your phone, they take the money off of your account and put it on mine. Then they can take that money. Let me say, like, I rack up, like, about $300-$400. I can go to Calton at A1, or I can go up to Bitcoin right there by the embassy, and I can cash that money in. And if it's $300 on it, and I want $300, they give me $300. They don't take anything off of it.
How is that growing among the populace, though?
Man, listen to me. I ain't had one in money sale. And I keep telling people, there are people that tell me, oh, yeah, I got M-Money on my phone, but I didn't put anything on it. Why? You just got the app there sitting down doing anything, doing nothing with it?
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
one of the things I believe this call in particular, as a matter of fact, let me say good morning to you. You are not self-assured as far as your product is concerned. Because when you could mention other competing products, and you could mention an area concerning the money process. Now, I know of a person. I can draw a simple scenario to you. There's a person who started selling fish cakes in this country. And then he came up with a slogan, the last two. And he sold fish cakes at almost every venue.
I know you're talking about.
The last two, and his process, his production was extremely well. He never went behind the coal pot. He had some one friend, and he had a situation where every time he moved from his station, there were 25 bags of fish cakes, six in the bag, for $5. Now, I'm saying you have to have an assurance of your product. You have to believe in your product. Your product is not in competition with anybody else. You've got the best product in the world as far as you're concerned.
The reason why I don't do that, there's a young lady that works with me, right? When I go to events, she would put a couple of fish cakes in a bag, and she would go around and she would sell them. I even nicknamed her last two because she lived around the corner from Ling Pong, right?
Mm. The late Ling Pong.
The late great Ling Pong.
So when she comes back with an empty tray, all the fish cakes have been sold.
But she come back with an empty tray, right?
Empty tray,
but
my problem is this,
right? Is that most people like the fish cakes hot and like them when they now come out the pan nice and crispy. When you take the fish cakes around, right, and you got them out for like about 10, 15 minutes, and you sell them as yeah, are you still selling them? Or are you putting them in the person's hand? The person eat them 15, 20 minutes after. The quality is not the same.
Colin, you know how many people have went to, and Mr. Ellis, this would have happened to you too, went to a fish cake stand to buy fish cakes, and unfortunately they had to wait until the fish cakes come out of the pot. As a result of that, they lost the feeling for the fish cake.
Yeah, but people want fish cakes hot, man.
They want fish cakes hot.
So no, but I have allowed a fair amount of discussion on this, because here is an example of a small operator who is giving you an insight into some of the challenges and some of the ways in which he is going about trying to make sure that his business can succeed. Now, how long have you been doing this business now?
4 years.
4 years.
4 years.
All right. And after 4 years, where are you now in this business?
Well, I'm doing pretty well, right? I'm doing pretty well. But I can do better. But the problem is this, right?
What will it take to get to create
get
that
further.
Environment? Yeah,
and they get a lot of promises. They get a lot of false promises. They got big companies that you know, their managers and stuff like that come and buy fish cakes from me, and they were like, you know, wait, we'll take to get your fish cake in our front store, and they give them the information. We exchange information. No, I don't like the email thing and all that kind of stuff. So my wife, she handled a lot of communication for me. She's really good. She's a special project quality control manager, and she communicate with these people, and all they started telling me is, you know, they can get back to me. There's about 2 years now, a couple of companies are telling me they can get back to me, but the managers still come and buy from me, right? And the what I'm offering them, the price that I'm offering them at, and what they are, what I would like them to sell back at is uncompetitive. I mean, I give them a deal out of this world because I'm a small man trying to come up.
But how many outlets do you have?
Well, I have one outlet and a van. One outlet and a van. And I have permission to open another outlet at Plumbers Mart. He gave me permission to open up there. And it kind of got me between a rock and a hard place.
Why?
If I really should open it. Because the way how people operate, you know, some people will call me. And I have my number displayed. And people will call me. And tell me, listen, they're coming down in traffic, right? I need 4 fish cakes and 2 chicken wings. There's like, no problem. So when they get there, they have the money in their hand. They give it to them. Traffic can hold up. You know, sometimes the car will be moving slow. You can just walk alongside the car, give it to them, take the money and move.
You're in Calamara, right, Colin?
But?
Yeah.
But?
Okay. Just want to make sure.
You said, hold on. But you said, You are unsure about expanding because of how people operate. Tell me, I didn't get the point.
Okay, the point is this, right? It's like, me give you an example. One day I was at my fish gate booth, and this guy drove by me. Some morning, stuff like that. He went down the street. He left. He passed me because of brand name, right? He passed me. He went down to Eagle Hall, and he bought some fish cakes. About 20 minutes later, I felt something hit me on my chest. And I was like, what the? When I look up, the guy was like, listen to me. I can't believe I passed you to get on there and buy these. I could get 5 fish cakes.
So, but that's competition, isn't it?
It's competition.
That's competition.
Okay, if you know.
How big is the fish? How big is this fish cake market in Barbados, though? Before we go.
Bigger than you think. It's huge.
Very, very, very big, Mr. Ellis.
It is very big. And a lot of people use things like fish essence and stuff like that. I use real fish cakes.
But they tell me if you don't, when people complain about that, they say basically that if you get rocks, you don't get rocks and rock cake, which means you don't need to get fish and fish cakes. But anyhow, I would like to thank you very much, sir, because as I said, this is an example of a small business operator sharing with us his experience and giving us some insight into the challenges associated with trying to develop your business in the country. I want to compliment you and your wife, because clearly you work as a team in this. Over the last 4 years, you, as you said, you've been able to create something that is working for you, but you want to take it to the next level. Mark, you want to make a comment before we go?
The caller will know from experience. The fish cake is the last product of one of the major products in Barbados themselves, and that is the butter, crisp fish cakes butter. There are people who make fish cakes butter, and they're sold by the big white containers.
I do that, too.
You do that?
Yeah, I do that, too.
You need to market that. You need to market that butter because that is a bigger business.
But you don't know his business well enough to say what he does and doesn't do.
I don't know, but what
he can pass, but he can stop in and
I'm going to pass.
But some other, you know, other observations people make and say, why is it that I am going to go to one of the established players rather than buy my food from a street vendor? And they say, well, they got more faith in the inspection process. Somebody says that. I mean, how regularly?
The health inspector come by my fish gate booth pretty often, right? And this is I like when the health inspector come around, because when the health inspector come, I beg them to come around more often, because when they do come and people see the health inspector buying from me, I tell you, no joke, sales just hit through the roof.
You must need a health inspector station next door, then.
You know, I'm serious. I go by. I'm talking about back to.
But that comes back to the whole question of the confidence.
Before we go real quick, right? Yeah. I'm talking about presentation, right? If you come to my fish gate booth, my staff be wearing uniforms.
Why is that important for you?
For people to see the name, to see it is a company, to see that it carries a name, it means something. You know what I mean? Presentation, the way how we look, our clothes are always clean. My hair, actually, I can't see my hair. I got my hair covered up. The young lady, she has her hair covered up too. We don't wear jewelry. We don't wear, you know, she doesn't wear any fingernail polish, any extensions, anything like that. And she's very polite. Presentation is very important. If you look at my van is well branded, fish gates that got fish in them, all of that kind of stuff.
So right? the other question is being able to attract and retain good staff. What's that like?
Well, I have good staff. I can't keep noise on my staff.
Yeah, but how did you get good staff?
Well, the young lady that working for me right now, she was always, I don't know, she's into sales. You got to find some person that loves sales, that love dealing with people, that have no problem with speaking with people, you know, that could turn a serious face into a smile, you know.
How many people did you change before you got her?
Only one.
And who did the selection process? You all on yourself, on your own?
Yes.
Okay. What were you looking for?
Well, when I opened the business, well, I wanted some person who could have been who have the passion just like me. But the young lady that was working with me at first, she was real shy, right? And I taught her how to open up, because she was very attractive and a lot of people liked her. So I taught her how to open up. And then she opened up and she really started to, and they started to teach her things about sales and about marketing, and she started to utilize every tool, every single tool. Even to the point, like, when people pass in a car and they just look at you, instead of staring back at them, say, "Hi, good morning, how are you doing?" That alone
triggered a sale. She used to pass her product.
What did she go on to do?
She went on to start her own business, a small business. Right. She went on to start her own business. And that made me feel good to see that I influenced some person to go and do it themselves.
And start.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for sharing your experience with us. Down to brass tacks, hello.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Yes. Now, I would like to report a bit of uncivil service. I know that the person works for me, and she's a Guyanese, and she has legal status here. She applied for, she's got permanent residence. She applied for a new passport, which is a Guyanese passport, by the way, and she took it in on January 6th to get it stamped. It had to get some stamp that said permanent resident. They told her when she took it in on January 6th that she could collect it in 3 working weeks. So in 3 working weeks, she took it in on the 27th, I think, and in order to get it. When she went, she was told, "It's not ready. Come back on again for the next Friday." So she went back, waited all day until they called her and told her, "It's not ready. Come back the next Friday." When she went, which was the last Friday, they said to her, "It's not ready. Come back the next Friday," which is this one coming. I would like to know if this is an example of proper civil service.
Clearly not. And the truth of the matter is that we've been singing the praises of the Immigration Department recently because quite a number of people have reported a significant improvement in the quality of their service. So hearing this, this seems a little out of the new ordinary for immigration. And I certainly am in no position to answer this question as to why it is that it has taken so long. But it is grossly unacceptable.
Because I have to give her leave,
yes,
to go down and get it. And I gave her 2 days off. I gave her the whole day of Friday because she said she doesn't know when they're going. And indeed, it took all day to tell her to come back the next. And then all day this last Friday tell her to come back the next.
Assuming, of course, that is exactly what happened. Because you know how life is.
Yes.
But if that is exactly what happened,
that is what happened.
Then, to me, I do not understand why it is absolutely necessary to have a person come down there to be told.
No, but they have her passport, you know. They have her passport.
No, but you can't call and tell a person
they
that.
Told her, in fact, she got specific instructions, don't call us.
No, but they should call her and tell her.
I agree with you. They should at least call when it's not ready. And
if
say,
it isn't ready, you pick up the phone and you call the person or you send them an email or something.
Correct.
And say to them a WhatsApp message because you must have their phone number. And
she
say
has
to
a
the,
WhatsApp account.
And say to the person, you know, unfortunately, it is not yet ready. You don't let the person come from wherever
please,
they have to come to come from
please,
and sit down there for a whole day.
Exactly. And get because I am paying her for the day.
Well, I as I said, I don't know the circumstances, but I do,
yeah,
based on what you are saying to me, it doesn't make sense to deal with it that way.
Yeah. So this will be the third, if she goes in on this Friday, it will be the third one consecutively. And
okay.
I am recommending to her that she gets a newspaper interested in and go in with a reporter, with a recorder and a video and find out if she gets it at all because they should have it ready or they should phone her and tell her it is not ready.
Yeah.
And if not, it will make the news.
Okay,
that's the
ma'am.
Only thing. She has no clout.
All right.
I just thought I would tell you.
Thanks for calling. Down to brass tacks. Welcome to the program. It's now 11:20. A reminder that this edition of Down to Brass Tacks ends at 1 o'clock today. Hello.
Hi, Mr. Ellis.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. I just want to make a brief comment about the gentleman with the fish cakes and
yes,
so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived in other countries and parts of my life and so forth, and I've had to work with small operators and small businesses and so forth. And I've also had worked with several small businesses in Barbados. And I have always found there's some reluctance, well, at this stage, some reluctance to deal with small operators because of the fact that there's no recourse. If you have somebody come in to fix pipes or do some woodwork or you take a car to get a mechanic shop, there's no recourse if something goes wrong.
Yeah.
These fellows, they want to argue, they want to fight, etc., etc. You can't hold the money because then, you know, they want to fight with you. But there's no recourse. And I think that is a major part in the reluctance of many people to deal with small operators, even in the food industry, because you don't know if it's food that's healthy, you don't know how it's prepared, you don't know anything, and there's no recourse. If you get sick from it, what do you do?
Well, and presentation has a lot to do with that too, though.
I agree. I agree. You have to get the customer there. But then after the fact, it's the reluctance, I think, on the public's part of, you know, how sanitary is the food.
But I must tell you, sir, there has been an explosion of people doing small businesses in this country who sell food. A lot of people are selling food. And I want to suggest to you that in real terms, I'm not picking up that degree of reticence on the part of the Barbadian public. It is particularly noticeable, for instance, from Thursday to Saturday in the evening across this country. It began in the city, but it has extended now to rural Barbados as well, where you will see people selling food. And I think it's an outgrowth of our tourist industry, where many of the people worked in tourism and have now decided that they would go into business on their own. So I've seen a lot of it.
Let me explain to you what I found in other countries. If I took my car to a mechanic shop in other countries, okay, and the mechanic did work on it, it was guaranteed by law for 45 days. If anything happened to my car relating to that repair, they had to repair it for me free of charge. And that was guaranteed by law. And I would suggest if the government wanted to help the small businessman, they should institute something like that.
Well,
okay.
I want to say to you, sir, that on your general point about the small business operator, I must agree with you. I want to say to you that Barbados badly needs some kind of mechanism by which you can determine whether this particular person or the other is the one that you're going to deal with. Experience has shown a couple of things. If you happen to be white, a foreigner, or somebody who has a well-known name in this country, if you happen to be a lawyer, a doctor, or one of the professionals, there are some people in this country who believe that they must jack up your prices beyond what is reasonable. Mm-hmm. And you cannot, your biggest mistake ever is to let anybody do work and then tell you what the price is. The price must be known up front. And with some of them, you have to put it in writing because they will try to rip you off. I had a man come by me a day to do a piece of masonry work at the back of the house. He gave me a price. And when it came time to move the concrete that had been dug up from the back of the house to the bin that had been put there to cart it away, he allowed me to know that the price that he gave me did not include moving that stuff, that debris, from the back to the bin, that I was supposed to pay him another $150 to move that stuff from there, and his friend who is working with him was supposed to get that money. I was to get rip off.
And he's making it very clear to you that he's ripping you off too.
No, but he making it clear. He made this is what he says to me. But you know, I never move debris. He's the first mason that I have ever met who said he don't move debris. That's a separate job altogether. I said, but listen, man, when you give me a price, that is understood to be part of it.
Yep.
All right? So that is the kind of stuff that we have to put up with from a lot of these people. The other thing that about them, they do half the job and don't come back.
Exactly.
All right, because
they want the money up front.
But you know what? That is how they became sole operators, because they had no discipline in the first place to work for anybody else.
Well,
a lot of them are like that, not all.
We need to have some law that they have to operate within, so that, you know, we have a recourse. In other words, you know, the general public, for example, people with food, okay? I mean, you know, you need to be able to identify, as you say, or to recognize places that have sanitary conditions. People go to Chafet and wherever else, big establishments, because they know the food is going to be the same. They also know that, you know, it's going to be the same price. They know what the same ingredients are. They know that the health standards are high. But they expect that the health standards are high because of the amount of money they've invested in their business. With a small operator, you don't know. And for most people, you're taking a chance. You know, especially when you're dealing with fish and that kind of produce, you can get serious illnesses.
I must tell you, though, I don't have the complaint about the food industry in Barbados. I think that we do a very good job in that regard. A very good job. I mean, when you start to then look at the number of people who do catering in the country and stuff like that, I mean, that is something that has grown exponentially in Barbados. And perhaps we don't even stop to think about, you know, the magnitude of that growth. I mean, one of the issues that you will face with it is the competition. I mean, there's so many people doing it right now, and it's a business. You can hit or miss. Huh? There are a lot of people who come in. There are a lot of people who come out. But I don't think we have that as a problem.
Couple of bad players in the marketplace to send a wave through the public that something is wrong. You know that.
Yeah. And the other point is, as you said, people are intimidated by some of these people too, you know. You know, a lot of women, for instance, operate, you know, they have their own homes, they negotiate with these people. But then that day comes where they are presented with the idea that they have to pay more money than you thought you had to pay. They give in. They give in because it's about, I mean, it's me against him, and, you know, I don't want nobody to come back at me and do this and do that. So, you know, I think that is part of what we have to address. It is part of a challenge, a big crisis that Barbados faces in the whole question of service to the customer. Deception. That people want to engage in the name of business. Because everybody believes now that being a business person means that you got to rip off people. Being a millionaire, a billionaire, means that you got to behave in a particularly crass way. And that's how you make money, you know? Treat people badly as you can. Have your way. This is where we are in the world. And, you know, Sparrow had a song called Capitalism Gone Mad. I think this is what we're seeing.
I have another good example. A friend told me last week was that they went to a particular supermarket, of which I won't mention their name, to buy a salad. And if they put chicken in the salad, it would cost them $18. And they said, you know, if I go to a van inside the robe, I can get a full lunch for $15.
Yes.
So why should I buy a salad with a few pieces of chicken in it for $18?
But you're paying for the ambiance.
The ambiance? Or am I paying because I feel secure that that food is safe.
You know, years ago, the late Eric Gehry used to run a place, I think they called the Evening Palace or something. So that was back in the 70s. And he used to charge, I think it was 25 EC or whatever it was at the time, which was seen as a lot of money back then. And when he was questioned about, you know, why it costs so much, he says you are paying for the atmosphere.
Yep. Anyhow, I thank you for the conversation, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, enjoy. Thank you. Hello.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
What I'm really calling about is because this morning a lady called about the stadium and the bathrooms and things that what she believed was on cap.
Yeah.
Now, I feel in mind now that she experienced that. But I just want to say, I probably don't know if she had thought it through before she called, because I figured mine, the National Sports Council or the management of the same very establishment with the stadium, I figured she should have contacted them first. The reason why I'm calling is to say this person who would have heard that may go along is just as what it is. But I have the knowledge where this is what has happened sometimes. Athletes. I don't want to say the boys borrow from all the girls.
Yeah.
When they don't run their races or participate in their little activities and whatever sport it is, they perspire, they run to the bathroom, wash their face, water drips all about, they wipe it with toilet paper, then sometimes they make sport with each other, throwing toilet paper at each other in the bathroom. As soon as there goes out and that bathroom is clean, another set of athletes run in and do the same everything again. But a lot of people, they don't realize this. And the reason why I'm calling before I feel is I believe is unfair, because a lot of people might just hear that and believe that those persons don't really do their job, which means to me it'd be like targeting the worker that's supposed to be doing as good as they can do. We have children and they are disciplined with us. They tidy up around us sometimes, but you know when they go with their other peers, and remember what you're dealing with, athletes, they're always doing something to make themselves wet somehow. And they go to the bathroom and they fool around.
Well,
so for example, one set goes out, another set goes in. What I would suggest that if the people for the sports council is listening, is that when they know they have these real activities a lot, they put some person or station some person there at the bathroom. I think that will help a lot more. That's my suggestion. What you were going to say?
I'm saying that it's much wider than athletes. I think that we see this across the board in the country. In many instances, young people do not keep their own homes clean, their own bedrooms clean. All right,
and true.
Therefore, when they leave home, they will treat the rest of the society the same way they treat their own environment.
True.
All right, we have too many people in the country who do not pay attention to those things, and it's not just young people, huh?
They got mature. That's what they
are. There are more mature people in this country who also have a problem as it relates to how they treat public facilities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I shudder to think how some of them treat their own homes and their own bathrooms.
I understand.
And it is part and parcel of what we now need to emphasize to a greater degree in trying to establish what makes the good citizen. What makes the good citizen? The good citizen is the one who looks after the environment. There are a lot of people out there who spend a lot of their time trying to make it better.
Yes.
But for every step they make, there are others who are trying to turn back the hands of the clock.
Okay.
They're not interested in that. So we have a lot of work to do in that regard.
My last thing about this is I just wanted to call to make sure that person who would have heard would just think about it. Athletes do go to the bathroom very regularly.
Yeah.
And you will find those type of things. That is why it may seem that one person goes in now. I may not realize.
But you're overemphasizing the point about athletes. I think that we are.
No, because she was speaking about the
We have
park,
spoken about
workers.
That. But we've spoken about that. I agree with you.
You talk in general.
I agree with you that the focus cannot be exclusively on the worker and what the worker has to do. The responsibility also rests with the people who use the facilities, who should be looking at the next person who has to come in there to use those facilities well.
True,
thing here about the virus, the coronavirus?
Yes.
Look.
Cleanliness, man.
Look, this is an opportunity for us to up our game when it comes to issues of hygiene. This is only one. This is only one of a series of viruses like that.
Yes.
We've had H1N1, we've had SARS, we've had MERS, all right, and now this one, all right? And all indications are that others are going to come. I mean, right now we have something going around here that has no name, the no-name brand that got everybody coming down with a problem with their throat and, you know, a bronchial infection and all sorts of stuff. I would like to know what that is.
And now, as long as they keep the environment dirty and not too cleansy, they're breathing the same very thing.
Well,
more.
You know, we are in danger of spreading, illness. Anyhow, let's move on. Thank you very much.